We're talking about nuclear power here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Americans are split down the middle on whether nuclear power is the path forward for making electricity in the U.S. According to the recent Gallup Environment poll that was conducted last month, roughly equal percentages of Americans say nuclear plants are safe as they are not safe. And this is the first time in Gallup's 10-year trend on this question that a plurality of Americans have considered nuclear power unsafe. So what questions do you have about nuclear power? Do you want to know more about how it works? What do you wonder about how we manage nuclear waste? We're at 800-642-1234. Paul Wilson is a nuclear engineering professor at UW-Madison. He chairs the Energy Analysis and Policy Graduate Certificate Program, and he serves on the board of directors for the American Nuclear Society. Paul, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, let's just take a moment to remember that it is the 40th anniversary just passed of the Three Mile Island nuclear reactor meltdown, and accidents like this one, like Chernobyl, they're perhaps why some people are hesitant about the use of nuclear power. Can you talk about the dangers of this type of energy? What are the risks?
So it's unfortunate that these incidents cloud people's understanding of nuclear energy. It's certainly true that at the time when Three Mile Island happened, there was a lot of history of lack of transparency and a lot of confusion about what was happening. But ultimately, the accident at Three Mile Island, while it was a big financial accident for the company, it didn't have a substantial consequence to the public other than the panic that it caused when it happened. And so while there are risks from operating nuclear power plants, the risk is largely to contamination of the land. And what we've seen over the last few situations like Chernobyl and Fukushima is that the immediate public health impact is actually quite small. And then the real impact that we have to deal with as a community is the impact to large amounts of land that sometimes become uninhabitable for a period of time.
Yeah, and while I don't remember too much about Three Mile Island, I really, really remember Chernobyl. That sticks out to me. What do we know about what happens after these types of disasters and how we respond to them and what we think about nuclear energy?
So there's a growing awareness that the way that we choose to set up our evacuation plans is maybe not the best way to manage these situations. We saw in Fukushima in particular that there was a lot of people evacuated that may have been safer if they'd stayed in place. And so one of the things that we are looking at as a community is how do we better manage that? I think if you go all the way back to Three Mile Island, I don't remember it much myself either. But one of the big things we learned there was it's really important to have a carefully coordinated and well-managed emergency response plan. In fact, this is a lesson from Three Mile Island that has been now copied into many other industries, chemical industries, oil refineries, things like that.
Nuclear waste can remain radioactive for generations. Can you explain how the uranium used to generate nuclear power becomes waste?
So for nuclear reactors in the United States today, we mine uranium from the earth, usually in other countries, and we import it for the most part. We process it and turn it into fuel for reactors, and then it spends about 4.5 years in a reactor. In that time, most of the uranium that goes into the reactor actually comes out as uranium again, and about 5% of it, 1/20th of it, is now radioactive material that needs to be managed carefully. It's all mixed in. It's a solid material, so it's not like we can just tap off that 5% and do something with it. And so the fission process causes this waste to arise. And now we have used nuclear fuel assemblies that then we put in large, basically swimming pools for 5 or 10 years to let it cool down. And after that time, we can take it out and put it in above-ground canisters and store it for decades at that point, and until we come up with a long-term policy solution.
So with the geological repository option for managing waste, it remains underground for generations. How do we know it will stay safe there?
So that's it's a long analysis, many decades of analysis in a site like Yucca Mountain, for example. So in 1987, the United States, as a matter of policy, chose Yucca Mountain in Nevada as the place to store used nuclear fuel, or the first place to store used nuclear fuel. And that set off a couple of decades of geologic study and then analysis. And the key part of that analysis is that the scientists and engineers use the information they know about the site to investigate hundreds of thousands of different possible futures. and examine what is the risk of radiation release to the public in each of those different possible futures. Those futures include relatively modest variations about the climate and the weather over that time, and they may include a few very dramatic variations, like volcanoes erupting through the middle of the repository or future civilizations digging and mining into the repository.
Perhaps climate change.
Yeah, climate change is certainly a factor in some of their analysis.
Talking with Paul Wilson, he is a nuclear engineering professor at UW-Madison. You can join in with your questions. What questions do you have about nuclear power? Do you want to know more about how it works? What do you wonder about how we manage the waste? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Chris now, joining us from Port Wing. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for this timely show. I just want to point a few things out. First of all, nuclear power is unaffordable. If we look at the levelized cost analyzed in 2017 by the Lazard Group, which does the levelized cost of energy analysis, wind and solar cost per megawatt hour is $48 and $49.9 per megawatt hour. Nuclear is 92.6, almost double the cost. It is totally uninsurable. Today, we, the U.S. taxpayers, insure the entire nuclear industry, except for a small pittance, under the Price-Anderson Act. If nuclear power was forced to pay for its hazards and pay for its insurance, it would cost significantly more, but it's still not affordable now.
Chris, let's pause right there to look at the expense of nuclear.
Certainly, nuclear energy is expensive compared to some sources. I think if you compare it to the renewable sources that we just heard about, they're rapidly coming down in price, and they're an important part of our energy future. A lot of studies are looking at long-term and deep decarbonization of our energy system. And if you're looking at really removing carbon from our electricity system, high penetrations of wind and solar actually start to reduce their affordability as well. And we had a visitor on campus last week who really had some interesting work that he'd done looking at this. And so you need to have a balanced system. You need to have to use his metaphor, a full team. You can't just have one position on your team and try and stock your team with one position. You need to have all different kinds of sources. And so looking in the future, even at the current prices of nuclear energy, they look like they still result in an affordable energy system in the future if you need to remove carbon.
But the infrastructure itself may be impeding getting these plants online in the first place or even remaining in operation. Is that impeding nuclear power?
So right now, the current fleet of reactors is challenged by the current economic structure of our energy markets. In some places in the country, we see very cheap natural gas is really driving down the ability of nuclear energy in particular, but all energy sources to be competitive.
We're learning about the future of nuclear energy, where research stands on advanced technology, how Wisconsin fits into this energy source, into this picture. UW-Madison nuclear engineering professor Paul Wilson stays with us. He's on the board of the American Nuclear Society. Gathering your questions about reactors, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. Do you want to know more about how nuclear power works? What do you wonder about how we manage nuclear waste? Do you remember Three Mile Island or perhaps the Chernobyl disaster in 86? Do you think we've come a long way since then, or are those kinds of accidents still worrisome to you? Call in. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation in just a minute right here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the future of nuclear energy, the challenges, the opportunities. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The industry has struggled with justifying the cost of building new reactors, and plants still in operation face tough competition right now in electricity markets from less expensive forms of generation. We saw last week a group of 15 senators reintroduced a bill to instate the Nuclear Energy Leadership Act, which would offer incentives for advanced nuclear energy. What policies should our government consider when it comes to energy generation and storage? Do you work at Wisconsin's nuclear plant? Tell us your experience at 800-642-1234. Paul Wilson is our guide. He's a nuclear engineering professor at UW-Madison. Let's go back to the phones now with Frank joining us from Green Bay. Good morning, Frank.
Morning.
What's on your mind?
Oh, I appreciate you guys bringing this conversation forward. I think it's going to be an important part in the short term of reducing carbon emissions and helping the grid be stable. One key point that I thought I would point out is you guys have been using the term generations for a while. I think it's important to correct that. The waste is going to last for millennia. It's going to last far more than generations. So my question for the guest is there has to be some kind of associated dollar amount for the nuclear waste that we have currently. Is there a dollar amount annually for the created nuclear waste in the projections if we were to amp this up? And then also with Yucca Mountain, I don't believe that ever went through. That was just a plan, right? I mean, what is our current status of the nuclear waste, and what are we actually trying to do,
Frank,
with that nuclear waste for the 10,000 years?
Yeah, Frank, thanks for those questions. Paul, can you tackle that?
Sure. So 2 points there. I think in terms of the cost, important step forward, important leadership example in nuclear energy is that in 1982, we established the nuclear waste fee. And for every single unit of energy produced at nuclear power plants since then, we have been contributing to a fund that's held by the U.S. government to pay for the ultimate disposal of spent nuclear fuel. So I like to compare it to a carbon tax. I mean, basically, this is nuclear energy's carbon tax, where we now allow other kinds of generation sources to put their waste into the atmosphere at no fee. Nuclear energy has been putting money down and saving money to manage its waste issues. On the topic of Yucca Mountain, so Yucca Mountain is the law of the land. It is where the current policy says we shall use nuclear fuel. A license application was submitted to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in 2008. That license application has been evaluated by the staff. Most assessments seem like it's probably a viable license design, but a lack of funding by Congress in annual appropriations for about the last 10 years has prevented the license application from moving forward.
Thanks, Frank. Let's go to Kristen now in La Crosse. Kristen, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
So I'm actually wondering, your guest made a statement earlier about the, how the land might be affected for a little while and it wouldn't be really and a long-term effect to human health. But I guess I'm wondering what the length of time that land would be affected, because it's not a small thing, kind of what your most recent guest commented on. It's not a short term that it would be unlivable. So I guess I'm wondering what your guest thoughts are on that.
I mentioned that to sort of contrast, I think, the sort of immediate fear that people have about nuclear reactors versus this sort of long-term impact. It's certainly an important factor, and I think that, and I also brought it up because I think it's where we as a nuclear community need to really turn our attention. For a lot of that land can be remediated fairly rapidly, usually a topsoil layer that needs to be cleaned off and cleared off. But I think there's also opportunities to do a lot of research and understand, you know, exactly how much of that land needs to be held out and for how long. So I think that when, you know, looking at the history we've had of accidents in nuclear energy, I think that we as a nuclear energy community really need to turn to this question of how land gets affected by accidents in the nuclear industry, because I think that the evidence is that large numbers of people don't get immediately harmed, but instead it's this long-term disruption, and this is a place where we need to make it better.
Well, let's look at politics for a moment. Democrats in the House are working on what they call this Green New Deal to address climate change, and the plan would eliminate America's dependence on fossil fuels. The deal doesn't exclude nuclear power from the solution, but it also doesn't recommend it. perhaps, you know, making the case for why nuclear energy should be a facet of that plan. What are you thinking there?
Yeah, so the Green New Deal is a really exciting opportunity, I think, for the nation to turn towards a real low-carbon solution. I see a lot of young nuclear engineers in particular are really excited about trying to build coalitions within that organization and within that group to develop a place for nuclear energy to be part of the solution. If you look at the different kinds of energy supply we have for electricity, they have different characteristics. And solar and wind are excellent for reducing our reliance on fuels. We may call them fuel savers. Every time the wind is blowing and the sun is shining, we should take full advantage of those as much as we can. But as you look to try and have a balanced and effective electricity system, you need other sorts of supplies. You need firm supplies that will be around whenever you need them and you can dispatch them on demand. And then you need other kinds that will ramp up in between and help you bridge between those firm and those variable sources. And the most efficient and economic energy systems of the future will need a balance of those things. And nuclear plays a role in that firm, low-carbon area.
Well, let's pretend the country would support a widespread nuclear build-out to transfer some of our energy dependence away from fossil fuels to nuclear. What would that take to happen to make that a reality?
I mean, the number one thing I suppose that many of us have been asking for a long time is a real sense of a national energy policy, where there is a committed direction in one way. Our energy system in the United States has long been, with deregulation, has been left to individual utilities and individual regions to decide what's right for them. And so I think something like a Green New Deal would establish a real sense of direction. And then with that, it would allow companies to flourish and come up with lots of new ideas. We can go forward with nuclear energy with existing technology. It's not clear that that's going to be the best path forward. The nuclear energy world has probably never had as much innovation, as much excitement around new ideas, different reactor concepts, particularly going to smaller reactors that can be built in a factory and shipped to site rather than large, big civil construction projects.
Yeah, and so there's this advanced technology going on in the background here as we even think about reactors. Do we have enough reactors right now in the country to even be able to elevate nuclear power?
So right now, the United States has nearly 100 reactors. We're the biggest user of nuclear energy in the world. And so if we can maintain all those reactors through their existing lifetime and maybe extend the lives of some of those reactors when it's safe to do so, then that will help us bridge into the next round of technology. The small modular reactors that are coming online now, if we can start to build those in the next 5 or 10 years and demonstrate that that's a viable path forward, it will make it easier for companies to invest when you know, one of the big challenges of nuclear energy is how expensive they are to build in the first place. And as you make the reactors bigger, over time, there was an economy of scale of having really big reactors. Now the economy of scale would be having many, many smaller reactors. It would allow us to take advantage of a lot of the innovation cycles that happen in other technologies that haven't been happening in nuclear energy.
So is it possible then to find out a balance here? What is the balance between nuclear, geothermal, fossil fuels? It sounds like you need to have a lot of different combinations here to make electricity work in the U.S.
Right. There's a diverse portfolio is really the best path forward. One of the big factors is really how hard we're going to push towards decarbonization. If we need to go to very low carbon levels, then that's going to narrow the set of choices down. As I said, the evidence is we need some sort of firm, low-carbon sources. Nuclear energy is one of them. Geothermal would be another. Carbon sequestration out of fossil fuel plants would be another. Some of those are available now. Some of those are geographically limited, and some of those are research projects for the future. But some combination of those things is probably necessary to have an efficient electricity system.
Taking a look at this Gallup poll last month, it asked the country about nuclear power. 49% of Americans favor the use of nuclear energy. 49% oppose it. Why do you think nuclear power is a polarizing topic?
I think that there's many reasons for that. I think at the core is the relationship people have with radiation. And that comes historically from duck and cover of the Cold War and the connection historically and in many people's minds continuing between the fear of radiation from nuclear weapons and the fear of radiation from nuclear reactors. And this unknown kind of nature of it. It's something that we don't naturally sense as humans. So we don't have an evolutionary time scale of being comfortable with this kind of sense.
As we wrap up, you're a nuclear engineer. You work with students all day long as they plot out their careers. Do you see excitement in them for a future in nuclear energy?
Yeah, I'm leaving today to go to the American Nuclear Society's National Student Conference, where there'll be a few hundred very excited nuclear engineers. In the last 10 or 15 years, it's been a real clear shift where the majority of the students that we engage with are people who are really concerned about the environment, concerned about climate, and they see nuclear energy as the solution to a real grand challenge problem. And that's the excitement that drives them to pursue their careers.
Paul, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Paul Wilson is a nuclear engineering professor at UW-Madison, chairs the Energy Analysis and Policy Graduate Certificate Program, and he's on the board of directors for the American Nuclear Society. Coming up next, it's news, then we'll look at the growing impact that climate change is having on the Great Lakes. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.